Thank you very much for coming. I remember usually my best experiments the best results I used to get actually on Friday. So I think also this is your lucky day. This is my last lecture actually. And today I will try somehow really to talk about a little bit more about electrochemistry. I gave it the title The Renaissance of the Electrochemistry. I strongly believe in electrochemistry future, actually. So I spent a lot of time discussing about solid aqueous. Today I'm going to try to demonstrate that whatever basically when I was going around my sort of structure and nature connecting with activity and stability is just one small part of the beauty of electrochemistry. And more somehow what I'm trying to do, I am trying to, for example, at least to try the common descriptors on this side and to see if there is anything, for example, to be used from aqueous system in order to be able to understand organic electrolytes. And very recently, actually, we start with solid interfaces. I hope I'm going to demonstrate that there is a beautiful bridge between all of these systems. And I have no doubt that the future is not in particular interface, but rather in interfacial properties of all of these three different systems. So let me briefly, again, just summarize, just to remind you, again, the last time what we've been discussing the last maybe three lectures. Keep in mind and don't forget on the structure of surface atoms. I know sometimes it's very difficult, for example, to see all of this. But believe me, without basically being able at least to get somehow a flavor of structure and nature of surface atoms, it's very difficult to talk about the interface. But today everyone is talking about the interface. Very recently we had the DOE workshop, and they were discussing about interfacial properties. But it was so general that in fact on the end I really didn't understand what exactly they want from the interface. So somehow, at least what I'm trying from the interface is to connect this structure and nature with various covalent and non-covalent interactions and how basically these very, very simple interactions are determining the kinetics of electrochemical reactions. When I'm talking about the kinetics, it's not really just kinetics of electron transfer. It is much more than that. I would say one day, at least, maybe not me, but I hope some of you will talk about the kinetics of, for example, the diffusion of anions to the interface, interaction of sort of reactive intermediates with the interface, intercalation, for example, of anions at the interface, and then somehow really trying to go back and forth. I think keep in mind and never forget that the interface, you have two prominent actually species. One is what we call promoters. And usually this is what catalysis is about. Unfortunately, catalysis is not just promoting the reaction, but understanding spectators. At least my experience is if you don't understand spectators, you wouldn't be able to understand electrocatalysis. So keep in mind, first try to understand spectators and then start fantasizing about promoters, which we never see. At least we can see spectators. Now, all of this, how promoters and spectators are affecting binding energy and all of this, I try to summarize with hydrogen and oxygen electrochemistry. Certainly, I'm not going to go through this, but again, don't forget on pH, or maybe in organic electrolyte, don't forget on pKa. This is something which is very, very important in order to understand many, many interfacial processes. Try really to think big. Don't think about hydrogen reaction or oxygen reaction or intercalation, deintercalation. I think it's time for electrochemistry really to think about the common descriptors. Are there common descriptors which are defining interfacial or bulk properties? And if there are, how basically we can utilize them in order to move forward? I think I spent a lot of time, at least last time, discussing about activity and stability. And I strongly believe without this, we can't move forward. I think I should have added here also conductivity, especially for the battery systems. But not only for the battery system, in fact, conductivity is very important for any oxide, for example, system, what we are studying for oxygen evolution reaction. And as I said, the most difficult, for example, is selectivity of the interface. But all of this can be nicely resolved, I think, if one really would utilize what I call the surface science approach. And if one would really try, for example, to bridge the gap between the fuel cells, electrolyzers, and batteries. And this is exactly, for example, what my group is trying to do right now. I think, as I said, we are not focusing really on fuel cells or electrolyzers or batteries per se, but rather, for example, as you will see, what might be actually common, how batteries can help fuel cells or vice versa. And in order to do this, I said, we develop our what we call surface science approach. This in particular slide, for example, we gave to DOE for our battery systems. How really we are thinking about battery systems and how basically we are trying to move forward with battery systems. So what basically we have here, we have our UHV, what we call the dry labs. And all of these UHV methods, what we can utilize in order to synthesize something with very well-defined, for example, structures. And I'm going to show one example on the end. But also, how to connect this dry lab with the wet lab. How to transfer the system without airborne contamination to the wet lab in order to use in situ methods and to try really to understand something what may or may not happen at the interface. Now, I use a lot of these models. It's not really just really to somehow to impress reviewers, believe me. I spent a lot of time thinking about this. And I never propose anything which basically is not somehow a common. I would never use this, as you would see, for lithium oxygen if this really is not connected, for example, with oxygen proton or with hydrogen reaction. So all of these images, what I use really first to help me to try somehow to visualize interface. And hopefully, for example, some of the readers who would be able to follow exactly what at least I'm trying to say. I never seen many of these intermediates. There are no methods to see this. But I think I have a freedom at least to think and to imagine what may or may not happen on the surface. So what exactly we want to do? We like to use all of these methods, but really not, as I said, to understand all of these particular processes, but rather somehow in this presentation, I would like somehow really to focus only on oxygen electrochemistry and to add water as an ingredient to try to connect these three completely different technologies. So what I'm trying to do, I'm going to try to remove the walls and just to demonstrate that really electrochemistry connects all of this. And either you are trying to understand electrochemistry as a big entity, or I would say if you would stay just with certain technology, sooner or later you are going to fail. So this is at least what I say my approach. I like oxygen, and for example, I would like to start with oxygen. And again, very quickly, I was trying to say that we are electrochemists somehow obsessed with volcano curves. Sometimes you really get some volcano curves with some meaning. In this case, for example, if you remember, most likely you don't, for the oxygen reduction reaction, simply trying to understand the electronic properties of surfaces, we were able to design the best catalyst so far for the oxygen reduction reaction in acid solution. Sometimes theory supports actually our experiments. Now, also if you remember, but most likely you don't, I said that volcano curves somehow in alkaline solution that's much, much more clouded. I think for the long time, ever since actually I did my first experiment, I didn't understand why gold 100, for example, is more active than platinum. How is possible that gold is more active for almost any of these highly energetic reactions than platinum? And that was certainly a big, big question mark. The big question mark is about, for example, what is the meaning of volcano in alkaline solutions? And you will see, this is when my bridge actually starts working very, very extensively. And at least what my message is going to be today, if I go from aqueous to organic electrolytes back and forth, I may actually even understand the puzzle of the volcano behavior in alkaline solution. So let me start it with something basically in black and white. This is, I think, I really like more of these black and white actually curves and everything than anything else. It's almost like comparing good old black and white movies with Hollywood movies today, which basically we are currently watching. These are my first lead sort of investigations of gold single crystal surfaces. This was part of my PhD thesis. And I was very proud of these leads, what you can see. You see these dots, and we assign these dots to certain structure. But certainly today, based on today's standards, for example, these are very bad lead images. But I don't really care. As I said, I was very proud of them. And what I really try to do, I write, for example, to see, can I see structural information, for example, when you have these three different crystals? I spent a lot of time learning how to mount them in rotating disk electrode. But after all, for example, I think it was the key how to understand this reaction. Again, it's very simple with four electrons, but still, for example, it was a puzzling behavior for many, many of these gold single crystal surfaces. One of the big puzzles was, how is possible that gold 100, for example, and now I don't know how you are familiar or not, but at least I would try. I tried to say that couple of times with rotating disk electrode, you are basically controlling or diffusion and kinetics, and you can really measure somehow what we call polarization curves. And I'm going to repeat the last time. The reversible potential for oxygen reduction reaction is somewhere here. And what we try to move this curve as close as possible to the reversible potential. And also, based on rotating disk electrode, you can, based on this diffusion current, you can basically extrapolate how many electrons you have. And what really was a big puzzle, that we got four electrons, for example, for gold 100. I was basically doing this surface, who knows how many times, to convince first myself and then my advisors that this is a true, actually, catalytic activity. And then, if you can see, you increase the overpotential. So basically, by increasing the overpotential, you should lower the activation barrier, so you would expect that this activity stays the same. However, you see the beauty of electrochemistry, you suddenly start losing the activity, and for four, you come to two electron process. And that was a big question mark. It was a so big question mark, actually, that I was somehow really I told myself, and also I told my group was, that I'm not going to retire before I understand this. And suddenly, actually, the labs were full of people. They're working 24 hours per day, actually. And I was very happy because after at least a couple of years, basically, we start coming to something what may actually resolve the puzzle of 100. But keep in mind something. This is not only puzzle of 100. I think this is a general puzzle of electrocatalysis. It's not really why 00 has this transition, but based on this, believe me, one can really see electrocatalysis completely different. And this is exactly what basically I am going to start with and to try really to see, is it possible, for example, really to understand all of these puzzles based on not only electrochemistry in aqueous systems, but also based on electrochemistry in organic electrolytes, because what basically we propose that the rate determining step is first electron transfer, and you are forming superoxo radical. But superoxo in aqueous system is very, very reactive, making almost immediately peroxo species. So I started this even before this hype with lithium oxygen. And I'm glad that I basically didn't publish too many papers, because somehow maybe even my papers would contribute to the confusion what lithium oxygen actually brought to the electrochemistry market. Now, that's the reason why we start actually thinking about superoxo electrochemistry and in organic environments. And my work was mostly inspired by two papers. One is by Donald Sawyer. And for those who are working with any kind of metal air batteries, I would recommend this strongly. I mean, if nothing else, the title is so beautiful that you have to read it. How super is superoxide? Maybe you are going in the end to be a little bit disappointed, because Donald actually concluded that, in fact, there is nothing super with superoxide. In fact, it's not even that reactive as we thought, which is good, because then you can at least study superoxo electrochemistry. And this is the reason why we use basically our rotating disk electrode. These data are now maybe more than 10 years old, to try to follow superoxo electrochemistry in DME with TBA. We use TBA because TBA is a bulky cation. And basically, there is no interference with the interface. This is almost like bulky cation, let's say bromide versus fluoride or something like this. But now, I think on the disk, certainly you can follow formation of superoxide, but on the ring, you can follow reduction, if you like, of superoxide, which we are producing. So quantitatively, you can, for example, follow this reaction. Now, what is very important is O2 minus is detectable in organic solvents. Honestly, I didn't think about lithium oxygen. I thought about my gold 100. At least I was saying, if, for example, I can do gold 100 in the same electrolyte, I may learn something about, for example, the 100 puzzle. But before that, certainly, I was also interested, for example, of how O2 minus is, for example, behaving in organic electrolytes. And again, in order, for example, to this, I would, again, suggest the paper of my advisor, Jaeger, who did, at that time, actually, Doran was doing experiment in Jaeger group the same time, actually, as I was actually visiting Jaeger. So I think they really were talking about, for example, all of these nucleophilic attacks and so on and so on. But again, if you go through Sawyer's papers and Jaeger's paper, you will see that Jaeger was actually inspired from Sawyer. So that's the reason why I would say, if you like to learn about, for example, electrochemistry in organic solvent, read Sawyer's paper first, which many, many, many actually students, I realize, even they don't know who is Donald Sawyer. Now, in order to somehow to see what, I know that there is a nucleophilic attack. Everyone is talking about this. I was more interested, for example, to see how I can utilize our sort of tools in order to be able to see what part of organic molecules actually O2 is attacking. In order to do this, certainly we use FTIR. And I'm not going to go through this in details. For example, only what I basically you can clearly see during discharge or charge, you can form formate, you can remove formate, and simultaneously you can see also during the charge formation of CO2. But again, as I said, it's not only this is what we observe experimentally, and although many people challenge this, that this is really the formate, in order to convince them, we did some DFT, and DFT confirmed that this is really a formate. Now, in order, as I said, my goal was not certainly to just to look at this FTIR, but rather to think what part of molecule O2 minus, for example, would attack. And again, I was very interested to develop methodology. Is it possible to label, for example, some of these hydrogen, for example, with deuterium, and to see differences and similarities? And indeed, for example, when you label this alpha hydrogen, for example, then you can see a clear shift in vibrational properties, indicating that in this particular case, because we label this alpha hydrogen, that indeed oxygen can interact and to attack alpha hydrogen. Now we know that in addition to alpha hydrogen, oxygen can attack also beta hydrogen. So any part of molecule is vulnerable. And that's the reason why, even if you trace level of O2 minus, you have to think before, for example, O2 minus would react with lithium or with sodium, you have to think how O2 minus would be consumed by interacting with organic electrolytes. Now, all of this, for example, as I said, it was just somehow to try to see what part of molecules and how stable our DME is. But the key, actually, of in our research is was really, for example, to understand, is it O2 minus structure sensitive process? And I think not only this, how the formation of 2 minus actually depends on the nature of the electrodes. And if you would work with in real coin cell, and if you would put, I don't know what, I think it would be almost impossible to try to resolve these two questions. So in our case, what we did, we used basically, again, superoxo electrochemistry, but on gold single crystals. In order to understand structure sensitivity, you can do only if you really know the surface structure, if you really know the number of surface atoms, and then you can say convincingly if there are or there are not structural sensitivity. In this case, you can see, for example, without rotation, this is, for example, the redox couple for oxygen superoxo electrochemistry. Certainly, if you would rotate, you see diffusion limiting currents. And now what is, for example, what I was really very surprised. You remember that how my 100 has this unique activity. You see basically that 100 and 111 has absolutely the same activities. So there is no really structure sensitivity for this electrochemistry. It's not only that, not for gold, but also if you look at platinum single crystals, you see the same. There is no structure sensitivity. Platinum 100 and 111 activities are absolutely the same. So I think for decades we were discussing that the rate determining step is the transfer of the first electron. From organic electrolytes, I learned that this is not true. And I think this is to understand not reaction mechanism because it's impossible, but to understand reaction pathway, I think this is very, very important. Now, how behave other, but keep in mind also that, for example, gold superoxo electrochemistry is very reversible. Platinum is very irreversible and shouldn't be because platinum is better catalyst than gold. So in order to understand all of this, we did series of single crystals, actually, work with gold, for example, platinum, iridium, but also we managed, for example, to put one layer of graphene on gold, platinum, single crystals, and so on and so on. Now, if you compare irreversibility, what you can clearly see, there are actually two very important actually things to point it out. Rather reversible, for example, superoxo electrochemistry you have on the glassy carbon and on gold, but rather irreversible electrochemistry on platinum and iridium. The most reversible electrochemistry you can obtain on graphene, one monolayer, which is deposited on platinum 111. And why is like this? Why you see this irreversibility? What is going on? I think we start actually the only way to understand. Now, if from organic solution, you go to aqueous systems. And in particular case, hopefully some of you remind that this curve is for platinum 111 imperchloric acid. And this is clean platinum. But if, for example, after my immersion of platinum in organic electrolytes, I will go to aqueous system, then you see that hydrogen is almost completely blocked, as well as OH. And this is the first indication of what we call the SEI formation on platinum 111 in this particular case. But now, what is happening if for, and what also was very interesting, it was very, very stable. You can make as cycle as you want. You can take this electrode, for example, and to leave platinum, and keep in mind this is platinum, which is hungry of impurity. You can leave platinum on the bench for a week, and to go to organic electrolytes with the same platinum and to get absolutely the same superoxide electrochemistry as before start torturing this platinum. So I think it's clear that whatever happened with platinum, we have a layer of something which is formed, which is protecting platinum. In order to learn what, we did lots of XPS and FTIR, and I don't like to go through all of this exercise. Only thing, but for example, you certainly see a lot of carbon species. And again, for mighty XPS, we decided, for example, what kind of carbon species you may have on the electrode. So I think what is important to emphasize that iridium and platinum are covered by SEI. So this is the reason why this irreversibility is coming from. I think even, for example, for any electrode material in organic electrolytes, if you have materials with different reactivity, you basically may have completely different superoxo electrochemistry. So what basically we at least suggested is irreversible SEI, or this SEI formation is leading to this irreversible superoxo electrochemistry. And somehow the best way to study superoxo electrochemistry is, for example, if you would have gold single crystals or maybe platinum or gold covered with these graphene structures. Now, we are doing a lot of experiments on this side, and we are learning a lot of about SEI in real, actually, lithium ion environments. But for now, I would like to stay with gold, because at least, for example, you see the superoxide electrochemistry is very, very reversible, is not disturbed with formation of this artificial SEI formation. So what I'm going to do right now is to try to see, for example, beyond superoxide electrochemistry. As I said, is not structure sensitive, but this is in water-free media. We spent a lot of time learning how, for example, to purify DME from, for example, water. That we purify so much that, in fact, we, certainly with Carl Fischer, we couldn't actually measure any water. But once you start adding water, ppm by ppm, suddenly you see a big transformation. Suddenly you see, for example, that you do see structure sensitivity. And again, you start basically reshaping or basically somehow drawing the beauty of platinum of gold 100. So that's the reason I believe, if you look at this shape and shape what I got many decades ago, is very similar. So it must be actually very, very interesting and very unexplored, if you like, correlation between the oxygen reduction reaction and not only adsorption of reaction intermediates, but also activity of water at the interface. So this was my first bridge. I have two pillars. On one bank, I have OHAD, which we know that, for example, is playing the big role. But on the other, actually, more and more, we are putting water. And we are trying really to understand how OH and water are talking to each other in both aqueous-based and organic-based environment in order to be able to understand what is going on, for example, with many, many of these puzzles which we established in the past. So let me now continue, for example, with OH and water, actually, story, and how one can really somehow connect OH and water in order to be able to understand this activation and finally to understand, for example, this 4-to-2 electron transformation. Now, as I said, one very, very important pillar of my bridge is OH. So in order to understand now in aqueous system what OH is doing, we did a lot of, for this is cyclic voltammetry on gold 100. Certainly we choose gold 100 purposely because of this very strong activation. For we choose gold 111, which is very inactive. We choose platinum, which, for example, is much more active than gold. But also we choose platinum 3 nickel, which we knew that in acid solution was the best catalyst. So you see now, this is the potential region where you can clearly see OH adsorption. I would like to repeat once more. We believe that this is OH. There is no spectroscopy which basically is going to tell me, is it true OH or some kind of oxide? But from voltammetry, what basically we can establish, we can definitely establish, for example, that activity is strongly dependent on the surface coverage by this OH. And if you compare, for example, the activity, you can see that the most active is platinum 3 nickel 111. In fact, this is absolutely the most active oxygen reduction catalyst, at least I ever seen, for the oxygen reduction reaction. If you look at the halfway potential, it's really above 1 volt. It's amazing. But also, again, you can see that gold 100 is more active than platinum 111. And in order to be able to understand this, for example, we really start thinking that OH, which in the past we said is always spectator, in fact may behave either as a spectator or as a promoter. How can OH promote the reaction? This is something, for example, what we assign to activated water. If you have OH on the surface, then definitely, because if you look at this partially negatively charged, can react with proton, bringing water very, very close to the surface. And I think this is very important, because protonation reaction is something also what we've been ignoring for a long time. Sort of we took protons just as a granted. We never really considered how fast protonation process is in order, for example, to go from superoxo maybe to hydroxo species. And now, what based on this we have our OH, which reacts with water in the inner Helmholtz plane. But also what is very important, this type of interaction is actually turning water most likely in such a way that now proton is very close to the surface. And now if you would make oxygen very close, this proton can be very, very reactive. Again, whatever I am suggesting is part of my imagination. We never seen activated water. But I hope some of you one day would say, oh, Menard was wrong or right. Now, in order somehow really to expand this story and really to try to get inside why, for example, gold 100 is more active than platinum 111, we've somehow made all of our models. Let's start with gold 111, where you have only two electron process. What most likely is happening? What we know, gold is covered very little with hydroxyl species, maybe only 0.15 monolayers, very, very small. So if you have OH on the surface, and if this OH can activate water, and certainly in the process, you have basically electron transfer and formation of superoxo species, then basically you have only these sites, only, for example, this cluster to make peroxo species. And once peroxo species in the electrolyte, there is no way that, for example, it can be reabsorbed and to somehow the reaction to proceed further. However, if you look at, for example, the coverage for 100 is much higher, it's roughly 0.25 monolayers. And in this particular case, basically, you may have actually two OH species very close to each other. So in order to go from 2 to 4 electron process, you need two OH species to activate two water molecules in order to be able, for example, to complete the reaction and to go, for example, from 2 to 4 electron process and, for example, to complete really reaction to hydroxyl species. Certainly, again, as I said, I never seen something like this. But how to understand platinum 3 nickel? I think platinum 3 nickel, enormous activity, is because you have even higher surface coverage. So now this process basically, or formation of surface activated water, for example, the concentration is much higher. Why platinum 111 is less active? because the surface coverage by OH is too high. So the whole story about adsorption of reaction intermediates and important in oxygen reduction reaction, I would say, should be really revisited. As most likely, not because I think there is this anomalous behavior, but simply because also this surface coverage by activated water actually should be taken into consideration. And what is the most active surface? Again, everything is coming based on Sabatier principle, that the coverage with activated water is neither too high nor too low. And this is exactly what we have for platinum 3 nickel. How this to transfer to acid solution, this is what we are working right now. Because at least more and more I think that, for example, adsorption of reaction intermediates, of oxygen reaction is extremely weak and should not really control the activity, for example, maybe not even in the acid, not even in the acid solution. How to apply all of this right now, for example, whatever we introduce as activated water from the ECFU system, how we can apply this now in lithium oxygen batteries. But before that, I try, whatever we propose is not just based on activated water model. You remember I was discussing that OH, for example, can somehow change the adsorption of OH. Or cations, basically you do have this unique interaction through non-covalent interactions between OH and cations. And you see how you can manipulate with oxide formation simply by the nature of cations. I also suggested before that somehow this activated water model is also operative for nickel hydroxyoxide. So this is not really only for oxygen reduction reaction. And this is basically the only way how, based on these trends, this is the only way how basically we can say that activated or surface water may actually play some important part. I think, unfortunately, it's too late for me. But if I would be your age, believe me, I would definitely try to understand water at the interface. I mean, know nothing about this. We have FTIR spectra, actually. Anyone can interpret any way it wants. But I think we need smart experiments. We need trends in order, for example, to confirm, or I would have nothing actually against if someone would tell me that I was completely wrong. But in my opinion, this is, for example, the direction which, for example, at least electrochemistry should go. And I think this is also not important only for the ECFU system. I'm almost convinced that this is also important for any kind of oxygen electrochemistry in organic environments. And certainly now we are coming to this much more complex lithium oxygen electrochemistry. And as I said many times, you can find any explanation you want about, for example, what is the driving force and what is controlling this process. So let my imagination to suggest at least what I think based on, for example, our experimental trends in the ECFU system. The first thing what we did certainly is, for example, trying to understand lithium oxygen electrochemistry on gold single crystal surfaces. And keep in mind, superoxo electrochemistry, at least what we found, is structure insensitive. So the first step really doesn't care about the surface structure. But if you look at, for example, now lithium oxygen does care. And you find that gold 100 is more active than gold 111. But keep in mind, once you add lithium perchlorate, which contains X ppm of water, in fact, to this structure sensitivity, we may actually somehow, we can bring something through this effect of water. And in order to prove this, we purposely add water in the same electrolyte, first 10 ppm, then 15 ppm, and then you see this somehow really a huge increase in, for example, catalytic activity. I'm talking about catalytic activity. Certainly, people in the battery field will talk about discharging processes. But again, what is really very nice with this, you can see activation, but then you can see deactivation. I know exactly how many sites I have on the surface. So this deactivation is very common in electrocatalysis because you start accumulating basically the product on the surface, which are contaminating or poisoning your reaction. But I believe in this because I know exactly how gold 111 and 100 behave. Now, in order really to understand why this deactivation is happening and what may or may not happen during this reaction, we did lots of things, first of all, to see that something on the surface. Again, this is nothing special. You see some blobs, and basically we learn nothing. We learn much more from Raman spectroscopy. And I think this is something what also, for example, was very, very important for us. Keep in mind here, anytime basically when you do Raman spectroscopy, you see a lot of garbage on the surface. And we shouldn't ignore this. I remember when we submitted our paper, actually, referee said, oh, your system is very dirty because you see all of this sort of carbonate and lithium oxygen bonds. But certainly you see them. And nothing is wrong with this. What was the most important? If, for example, we would have no water in our system, basically you see no, for example, any sign of lithium peroxide formation. Only when you add, for example, some amount, let's say 40 ppm of water, and with time you start seeing development of lithium peroxide. So only based on this, we said that water is behaving like a catalyst, that you really need water in order to make lithium peroxide. Now, how we are making lithium peroxide? Again, I'm going to go with one of my cartoons. And as I said many times, this is just a cartoon. Don't follow this. This is sort of, again, my imagination. What basically is happening, most likely, the first step is certainly you have electron transfer and you have superoxide formation very close to the surface. And then certainly in the inner layer, or you have lithium, which react sort of very close to the surface, and then is forming lithium superoxide. And I'm almost certain that formation of lithium superoxide is almost like nucleation, actually, step. And we know that nucleation usually depends on number of defects. And 100 is much more defected surface than 111. So what I expect to have much more or little bit more lithium superoxide on 100 than on 111. But now, what is the role of this lithium superoxide? This is just, for example, one can imagine, let's replace lithium superoxide with OH, and then you can again, for example, see that lithium superoxide can activate water. And keep in mind that just because of, for example, the water properties, water-like surface, much more certainly, for example, than this strongly solvated perchloric acid anions. So this is what we suggested again, that lithium is activating water, and then water then proton is reacting with OH, the same as in alkaline solution, making peroxide, which then can react with lithium, and then lithium can precipitate as lithium superoxide. But in this process also what you do, you liberate one proton, and certainly in this process you liberate one OH, so you can recombine OH and proton to form yet another, for example, molecule of water. That's the reason why we suggested that this regeneration of water actually is almost like catalysis. This is, water is behaving like a catalyst. You never utilize completely water because it is regenerated. And with very few ppm of water, you can run the reaction until you completely cover the surface with lithium superoxide. So this is, I would say, our story about importance of water actually in activating sort of lithium superoxide electrochemistry and formation of lithium superoxide. But can I use now this back to my aqueous systems? Are there any examples that, for example, I can now utilize the same approach for the electrochemistry in aqueous systems? And this is somehow what also we continue actually working on. Again, let me go back a couple of decades and just somehow to say once more, this is polycrystalline gold. And gold, polycrystalline gold, as I said, is very, very inactive, very lazy surface for oxygen reduction reaction. You can see you have only two electrons and you can basically see lots of formation of peroxide. However, if you would put lead on gold, and we know that lead is usually poison, you suddenly go from 2 to 4 electron process. You suddenly see that you change reaction pathway and basically you almost see no peroxide formation anymore. And I remember actually that was one of the questions when I defended my thesis. They asked me how this is possible. And I certainly made up a story about that lead somehow can change the electronic properties of gold and so on and so on. In fact, I think it's much simpler. And based on lithium superoxo story, what I believe is that somehow if we now have lead on the surface, and lead is never lead, it's over somehow lead hydroxyoxide on the surface, then lead can do the same trick, can activate water, and then this activation of water certainly is going to activate the oxygen reduction reaction. So it's really not just lithium superoxide, it's not just oxygen to superoxide chemistry. I think once you start forming the circle about many, many other systems, and you see somehow very common behavior, more and more I start to believe that we actually might have something in our hands about the activated water model. So the final message is deprotonation of water is an important step. And we have been ignoring this for decades. Absorption of oxygen intermediates, at least how I see right now, is rather weak. So in order to design new catalysts, basically we have to design new protonation somehow. We have to have a proton donors, if you like, in the interface in order to accelerate the reaction. Now this is actually our direction, and that's the reason why yesterday we have very nice discussions about the ligand effect, what ligand may do. And I hope that actual ligand may help us in order somehow to activate water through ligand, because ligand chemistry more or less might be this non-covalent electrochemistry. I'm talking actually the last four lectures. So this is my bridge between, if you like, aqueous and non-aqueous systems. And what I really like, learning from one and applying to the other system and going around, we are learning more, more, and more. What about some other reactions, like, for example, metal deposition? Again, yesterday we discussed a lot of, actually, with Victor about copper electrochemistry. That's the reason why I use copper. Just again to demonstrate how beautiful it is when you study copper deposition on platinum single crystals. And the beauty is that you can also study on the disk and simultaneously to follow what is happening on the ring. So you can quantitatively, you can basically see how much you are depositing and what's going on. I think on the disk you can see these sharp peaks, which are corresponding whatever we call under potential deposition, forgotten disk, but this is really copper deposition. And what we found, if for example we would do this process in chloride-free electrolytes, if you have only water, the reaction would be so slow basically that everything would be kinetically controlled. So we learn a lot of from actually metal deposition in aqueous systems. So we did lead, we did bismuth, we just name it. So I was thinking, if we know something about copper deposition, which is copper 2+, can we learn, can we apply this knowledge in order to understand something which, for example, might appear to be more complex, which is magnesium deposition? This is the part of Jay Caesar work, because Jay Caesar wanted to go beyond lithium ion. And these are experiments which I'm going to show now for magnesium deposition in magnesium TFSI. And this is something, again, our approach was absolutely the same as we utilized for copper deposition. Even we have now 3 magnesium single crystals, for example, that we can study also more in depth what's going on. But let me just briefly summarize what we see. We see, for example, that there is a huge, actually, nucleation overpotential for magnesium deposition. And the difference between, for example, anodic and cathodic processes is huge, is one in magnesium TFSI. And you have this huge irreversible process. Now, I'm going to address also this very small peak, because in electrochemistry, there is nothing small. Many times, actually, small is rather big effect. Now, we were thinking, because this, in this particular case, we learned a lot of about conductivity of the electrolyte. So the first thing was, but is this really control, for example, with somehow solvation or whatever you can imagine in the double layer, or simply by uncompensated IR? So we start compensating IR, and first, when you add 20 ohms, you start increasing in efficiency, but also increasing in reversibility. And then when you fully compensate, then you see this beautiful, actually, very sharp and somehow a peak position with rather high efficiency. Certainly for magnesium, better 80 is very small. You need to go very, very high. But at least what we wanted, at least to somehow in our paper, the message was pay attention on IR. Don't ignore IR. Because all of these organic electrolytes are not as conductive as water-based electrolytes. And somehow this is really that intrinsic kinetics can be measured only with appropriate IR correction. And I think in our case, certainly we have Autolab, that automatically we can do this. I realize that in your labs, for example, you have to work maybe very, very hard to compensate all of this, but try to compensate for any process. Now, what is on the surface? We know there's something, we are forming something on the surface. And then basically this is what we are trying to do. Now, once we have IR compensated, we were depositing or stripping magnesium from the surface. And certainly, we use a lot of our ex situ experiments. Now, we are trying to develop also in situ. And what we got, not surprisingly, with our XPS, once you immerse, let's say, this potential, you can see basically that you have magnesium oxide, metallic magnesium, and magnesium hydroxyoxide. And keep in mind that XPS basically is giving you information, something which is circa 10 angstrom from the surface. So all of these three components is telling you that certainly you are not depositing magnesium in this process. You are depositing combination of this magnesium hydroxyoxide. Now, how deep, or for example, how thick layers of this hydroxyoxide is, you can learn simply by mildly sputtering. And you can see by if you would sputter this surface, immediately you can see now, for example, that metallic magnesium is appearing actually. So this is very somehow thin layer, but certainly very, very dangerous layer for complete actual having sort of high efficiency for magnesium deposition and stripping. Now, if you look at also this voltammetry, you see that this region is completely flat. So one can say, oh, in this region is really nothing happening. But if you would modify, if you would magnify, then you certainly see that this region is very alive. And you see all of these peaks. I'm not going to talk about the second sort of region, but rather I focus on this third region and to try to see why we see this peak. And can we actually assign this peak to certain specific surface processes? Considering that every of these our electrolytes, we knew that, we tried to purify, but always we couldn't go below 3 ppm of water. So again, we were thinking maybe this is coming from water. And in order, again, to learn all of this, one can basically use the very same electrolyte, but then to hold the potential, because there are some tricks how you can probe impurities. One trick is to hold the potential, and certainly if you would hold here potential, and if you go positive, what you see that the first peak, magnesium stripping, is going down, but the second peak is going up. This is certainly telling you that something during the hold is absorbing on the surface, which is disturbing this ratio. and definitely this might be impurity. To confirm that this is impurity, we start rotating, because by rotation you can increase the diffusion of impurity, and you see the same. By rotation, the first peak is going down, the second peak is going up. Now, again, what we were thinking, is this maybe water or chloride as impurity? And in order to decouple this, certainly we say, let's add first water to see what may happen. When you add water, you clearly see that this peak is going up. You see basically you activating nucleation, but also you see that this peak is going, that this third peak is basically also going up. So everything what, for example, you see is clearly, even voltammetry is telling you that you are forming kind of magnesium hydroxyoxide on the surface, which are basically determining efficiency of your stripping and deposition. And this is with XPS clearly confirmed, I would say. Certainly, when you add water, you see a lot of magnesium hydroxyoxide. But again, when you sputter, you basically diminish all of this, and magnesium suddenly starts to appear onto the surface. So I think it's very, very important, for example, to keep in mind that small level of water actually can play a big, big, big actually effect on deposition in organic electrolytes, simply because formation of this hydroxyoxide. What about chloride? Why Grignards, for example, are somehow working with Doran was showing, with very high efficiency. In order to understand Grignards, for example, I think one should really understand my copper chloride story, because having copper and chloride, I know that chloride and copper, they like each other. And everything what we see as a structure, and this is X-ray diffraction actually somehow produce images. Chloride.
Yeah, but you have fluor. You have Mg, TFSI.
Yes.
Why you talk about chloride? Why you talk about chloride? And you form MgF2 and all
that? I think we may have also in our electrodes also some trace level of chloride.
But why you suppose chloride while you have fluoride? You know that you have it. Why you eliminate chloride?
I think maybe, again, first of all, most likely I was biased with copper chloride story. I was biased with Grignard story, because you have chlorides and all of this. To add fluoride, I think it would be much more difficult to follow what's going on because of solvation processes and many other processes. So let's see what chloride can do. And also we add chloride because I'd like to see competition between chloride and water. And in this case, you see that you have only 40 ppm of chloride, but I think we do have somehow a result we're showing that our base electrolyte also contains some chloride in fluor. Let's say HF. You cannot make HF. You can buy the purest one without not containing chloride. So this is now what you can see. Small amount of chloride, clearly, for example, irreversibility is staying much higher, and suddenly you're going to very high efficiency. So I think in order, for example, to, and based on XPS, you can clearly see that also you're forming some magnesium chloride on the surface, which definitely, for example, can control also the amount of magnesium hydroxyoxide and magnesium oxide. But besides all of this, for example, I think what chloride is really doing is not really that somehow is changing, if you like, is protecting the surface from magnesium hydroxide and magnesium oxide. But also, I think chloride, hydration of magnesium with chloride, for example, is much stronger maybe than hydration of magnesium. So also hydration may play the role in whatever actually chloride is doing in our systems. Now, I have only maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes more, and I don't... this is, again, talking about, for example, a bad water, actually, if you like. That waters, be very careful with small amount of water, especially for metal deposition. Can really make all of these hydroxyoxides, especially in magnesium, I think, is going to be very, very difficult to work with high efficiency if you have trace level of chloride. Certainly, if you have high surface area, then you may somehow overcome some of these problems. Let's talk about good water. And what we found actually with the good water is basically that water is somehow helping intercalation of magnesium. And I'm not going to go through this again, but just for example, we managed, for example, again, because we were interested in, first of all, we were very interested in utilizing electrochemical deposition method to make V2O5 for many reasons. I don't like it. This is because there is also publication about these electrochemical deposition methods for sodium intercalation. Now we have this sort of bilayer structured with large interlayer spacing actually when you make when you start actually using this electrochemical deposition method. Now what is basically also we did TGE trying to see, because certainly this is done in aqueous systems, what type of water actually you may expect to have. And the very, very long story to make very short, we find basically three types of water: hydrogen bonded network, surface oxygen, hydrogen water. And basically, after 100 degrees, you can remove the water and you can form this ontorobic V2O5 with very low spacing. So this basically a structure was completely inactive for magnesium intercalation. Now, initially, I thought, I don't know why I left. I didn't like to show any charge-discharge curves. I think you produce so many that somehow I was trying really to avoid this, and this is somehow skipped me. And I realized actually when I start actually talking about all of this. But let's forget on charge-discharge, and let's say we use fluorescence, for example, because it was a big challenge. Are we really depositing lithium on the surface, or lithium is in the bulk of V2O5? And I think we did a lot of experiments, and finally we convinced the reviewer that magnesium is in the structure. But now what is happening in the structure? This is what, for example, I was very interested. So we start doing FTIR. This is something also, I think, what Peter Novak actually did many decades ago, trying to use FTIR in order to resolve the effect of structural water. So I think, again, what we use FTIR is just, for example, in transmission mode, we were able to see this high frequency actually peak, which can be assigned to single OH bond, but then you see basically this lower frequency peak, which can assign with the hydrogen bonding. But also there is this very small actually band, which, for example, can be assigned also to my activated water. So this is the reason why, for example, now we are trying to do not only with magnesium, but we are now using zinc and many other actually sodium, trying to see, is it really possible to see that maybe that this activated water inside the structure may control, for example, intercalation, deintercalation processes the same way as at the interface. Definitely water is playing the role. Once you get rid of water from the bulk, you can't charge and discharge anymore your magnesium battery. So I think all of this, what, for example, I was trying somehow to summarize is somehow it's really, again, to try to connect activated water, for example, which may exist in the bulk, and activated water which may exist at the interfaces. Now, all of this was for solid liquid electrochemical interfaces. The remaining 5 minutes, I'm just going to dedicate to my new project, which is solid-solid. And this is something what, for example, again, I'm not going to go in details. I think objective is really, at least, DOE asked me to try to develop this surface science approach to understand at atomic levels, for example, what may happen at the interface, because you have all of these problems, vacancy, motion, interfacial transport, grain boundary effect, and so on and so on. In order to do this, I would say, certainly everyone is promising, we certainly said, let's try to use, for example, very well-defined single crystals before we start actually focusing on any of real materials. But again, with all of this, there are huge challenges. And at least our funding most likely it helps us to resolve some of these challenges, which I try actually to summarize. I think the big is really, what is the growth of lithium, for example, on all of these solid interfaces? How lithium interacts with solid electrolytes? Can we visualize the transport across the interfaces? What, for example, at least I was very interested in is certainly mobility of oxygen vacancies. Because I like also to connect oxygen somehow, to oxygen to be somehow a bridge between solid-solid and solid-liquid interfaces. And many other systems, how we are doing all of this. We have, in our lab, basically, we have a system in which, for example, we have sputtering chamber. You can see many of these open, actually, space here. Pretty soon, we are going to have PLD or even MBE method that you can basically deposit your very well-defined films on any surface, for example, which is very characterized. And then from these sputtering chambers or any other chamber, physical chamber, you can go without airborne contamination into analytical chamber, where you can do XPS, lead, whatever you want. Once you characterize your surfaces, then you can go all the way back down to the glove box. You can assemble, for example, your solid-solid battery. You can charge, discharge, you can use impedance, whatever you want, and then to go back to analytical chamber. And this is certainly only half of the story. The key is certainly how to connect, and this is in my in my department. The key is how to connect this lab, for example, with APS, which is a synchrotron facilities. And now this is, we have actually multimodal actually sample holder. Then from this glove box, we can go, for example, to the synchrotron, just across the street. And we can use many methods, even at synchrotron, for example, we can in situ use PLD and to follow what kind of structure we are forming. That's the reason why I think only having something like this, one can really somehow think about understanding interfaces at solid-solid systems. Let me show just a flavor, and let me show our first results. This is something, again, we start with strontium single crystals. Nobody's going to use STO in real battery, but somehow, at least I wanted to understand what will happen once you deposit lithium on strontium. How lithium can interact with strontium, titanium, or oxygen? Can we follow really this? Can we really utilize our UHV system? And now this is, for example, our sputtering chamber. You can sputter lithium on STO. You can go to analytical chamber. But before even this, you can see single crystal, strontium, STO. And then basically, you can really somehow using analytical tools in order to be able to see how lithium is interacting with STO. These are our first results. And now, from sputtering chamber, you go to analytical chamber. With XPS, what you see if you follow lithium 1S, for example, you can see that you are forming lithium superoxide. And certainly, you have also some lithium metal. But in addition, I think, as I said, it was very interesting to see what is happening with strontium. Strontium is staying strontium, for example, doesn't change oxidation state. What was really very nice when we basically see that once you have lithium on the surface, and this lithium oxide formation really coincides with change in oxidation state of titanium. So now we really know that our surfaces, for example, are really not that stable. So lithium interacting with all of these surfaces, for example, even with STO, can basically chemically transform actually interfacial properties. If we do, now we are doing with LLZO, which is somehow commercially, at least people try to use, and we see no change. So LLZO is rather stable, and this is really very interesting to understand, for example, what are the key differences? Certainly, the key differences are in the chemistry of, for example, titania versus zirconium, for example. But nevertheless, this is just to give you a flavor that we can use our system to try, for example, to build slowly somehow the knowledge for solid-solid interfaces. Can we see also, can we use also other methods to try to see the lithium deposit? We also develop our AFM actually method. And now you have lithium deposit, for example, on STO, and then you can purposely go in the air to expose to the air and to form lithium, lithium carbonate, and then you can clearly see all of these islands, which basically represent somehow the position of lithium on the surface. Now, in order to get a, in order to understand how strongly, for example, even carbonate or even lithium interact with STO, we try to remove lithium carbonate in water, and then basically we free, certainly we dissolve lithium carbonate, and then what we found, the structure of our STO, which is very similar as the pristine one. So at least based on this, we can say that somehow the interaction between whatever we are forming on STO and our substrate is rather weak. Now, again, this is, again, based on also on this. We learned that lithium deposition is most likely following the so-called Stransky-Krasanov model, which you have these islands. It's very difficult. Lithium doesn't like to wet many, many of these oxides. Certainly in battery, the system how to establish the battery is completely different. You use temperature and brutal force somehow to press all of this together. And I appreciate this, but also at least what I was interested, for example, to understand at least some kind of chemistry between lithium and solid electrolytes. Now, this is, as I said, just to give you the flavor. Right now, basically, again, connecting our previous work with new work, for example, as I said, we are now developing PLD to try to use the same methodology to make, for example, this some of complex, actually, solid electrolytes. We also, for example, are working very hard in order to develop this multimodal holder that basically you can go really from one environment to the second one. I already mentioned to someone that APS, now we have a method to simultaneously follow XPS, for example, with Zane spectroscopy. And I think this is also going to be important somehow to try resolving the bulk and near surface electronic properties. Now, in addition to all of this, for example, we are also developing, related to the very same program, somehow in situ electrochemical characterization method for probing stability and selectivity of interfaces, for example, even in the coin cell. This is one of our methods how, for example, to put some oxide, and most likely one of these is lithium cobalt oxide. This is our, I heavily advertise our sort of ICP-MS, and this is, for example, where we are doing, for example, our electrochemical. This is the glove box, and inside we have our cell, and this is ICP, which now we are utilizing in order to follow stability of any oxide, if you like, in organic electrolytes. Now, based on all of this, this is, as I said, I was just somehow was trying also to tell you, or at least to share with you our future directions. But again, at least my future directions, maybe not for all the people from my group, is try to really to somehow to use oxygen as somehow the key descriptor which may connect all of these three interfaces. Now, I spent a lot of time talking and discussing electrochemical interfaces. I was discussing fuel cells and electrolyzer mainly, and just I gave you a flavor of the batteries. But also I said electrochemical interfaces are everywhere. This very similar, sort of certainly with different ingredients, electrochemical interface you can find with capacitor, in solar system, sensor, electrodeposition, corrosion, synthesis, and certainly the processes in the human body. So I think if you look at, this is the reason why I believe in the renaissance of electrochemistry. Again, I was telling you what I would like to do, and definitely I would like, as I said, I would like to learn much more about whatever we suggested as activated water model. But believe me, more and more corrosion is going to play the key role. focusing on understanding corrosion at atomic and molecular levels actually may be a big actually push in electrochemical processes. Now, for all of this, again, as I said, opportunities are huge. I think in my case, I'm going to stay with these three electrochemical interfaces. I have a huge help from the people from my group. And usually when I discuss from them, and I would like also somehow to share with you, I usually tell them that this is really the golden age of surface electrochemistry. And I told them, don't miss the opportunity. The message is really not stay all the time on the lab, although 60% of the message was stay all the time in the lab. But somehow, it's really, I think electrochemistry is everywhere. And I think your future, for example, may actually be determined with the beauty of what, for example, these electrochemical interfaces may provide us in the future. So this is my last message. And once more, I would like to thank Jean-Marie for inviting me. I really appreciate this. I learned so much. I enjoy so much. Not only the taste of beautiful tea, actually, what was offered to me, but also very fruitful conversation with many groups. I think, actually, that at the college, you have very strong electrochemistry and very strong leadership. So stick together and try, really, don't miss the opportunity. Once more, thank you very much.